Welcome to the Dirt Show, brought to you by Palver's Towing, and we got a great one for you today. We're going to hear from National Sprint Car Hall of Fame inductee Rayleigh Goodwin. We're also going to hear from Scott from Wolf & Sons Yard Service, Corey from Byers Racing Engines, and our old friend Speed from Cookies Barbecue Sauces and Seasonings, right after a few words from our sponsors.
Pulver Motor Service is far more than towing and recovery. Pulver has the versatility and tools to move anything with wheels. Why should you invest in a truck and trailer when for a fraction of the cost, Pulver can move your heavy equipment to the job site and back? With our years of experience and investment in equipment, Pulver Motor Service isn't limited by size, weight, or distance. See for yourself at pulvermotorservice.com. Contact us today and find out how we can help move your business forward.
We've all heard the old saying, going the extra mile. When it comes to repairing your vehicle, that old saying rings true at Midwest Collision in Faribault. You may have to drive that extra mile, but Bob and his staff at Midwest Collision will reward you with quick and educational estimates. Plus, they'll go the extra mile to make sure you are completely satisfied with your repair. Call Midwest Collision today at 332-2434. They're miles ahead of the competition.
Coles Electric in Owatonna is there, whether it's a small or large project, with state-of-the-art technology ensuring a professional job will be done every time. Coles Electric services include new construction, design and build, lighting design and installation, remodel work, high voltage, and PLCs. Coles other services include generator sales, security systems, infrared cameras, directional boring systems, underground trenching, plowing, cable location, vacuum excavation, pole setting, boom truck, and 24-hour on-call emergency service. That's Coles Electric in Owatonna. Licensed, bonded, insured, and offering free estimates.
Let me tell you, friends, about our store. It's a great place we call Miners Outdoor.
Miners Outdoor, your total source Husqvarna dealer in Blooming Prairie, has everything your yard needs. From chainsaws, leaf blowers, and weed trimmers to zero-turn mowers and everything in between. That's what being your Husqvarna Total Source dealer is all about. Stop in today to see the best selection in quality Husqvarna outdoor power equipment. That's Miners Outdoor, Highway 218, Blooming Prairie.
Miners Outdoor, Major Tough.
AAA Discount Month is back at Napa Auto Parts now through October 31st. You'll save 20% instantly on qualifying purchases when you show your AAA Discount Rewards card. Napa has other ways to help you save too, like a $10 virtual Visa gift card when you purchase a 5-quart jug of Mobile 1 full synthetic motor oil for only $27.99. Plenty more special offers all month long at Napa. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Hey, this is Dave from Severson Oil, VP Racing Fuels, and you're listening to the Driver Segment on The Dirt Show.
Welcome back to the Driver Segment here on The Dirt Show, and it is my pleasure today to be joined by Hall of Fame sprint car driver Rayleigh Goodwin. And Rayleigh, you grew up near the location where the first Wooden Mile racetrack was built. The Dirt Show is all about racing history. These old board tracks never lasted long because they were exposed to the elements, and many ended up getting burnt down. A Minnesota driver, Tommy Milton, won that very first race held there in 1922. What stories did you hear about that board track close to where you grew up?
Well, it was built out at 95th, and we call it Holmes Road now, but it was in the outskirts of South Kansas City, and it was partially owned by the Kansas City Star, which is our newspaper, and after the Ford track, they were never friendly with racing after that, since they had money in the track, and when the track burnt, they lost money, and so that put a bad taste in their mouth for Kansas City. But it was the first place that cars went on a closed circuit above 100 miles an hour average, and of course it was before my time, but there's stories of the board tracks and Mr. Melton that won it, and all these things is part of the history of Kansas City.
You grew up on a dairy farm. As a dairy farmer once told me, you are married to the cows.
Yeah, we were. And my father was a small dairyman, and our farm is where the sports complex is today in Kansas City. They call it Stadium Drive, but at that time it was called Leeds Road. Our address was a mile and a half east of Leeds, and the big thing in Leeds, Missouri was the Chevrolet plant, and that employed all the farmers that couldn't make it, you know.
You also played baseball, like I did,
yes.
And we were both catchers, and I think I was noted as the worst catcher in Steele County.
Well, it was the hardest job in Steele County. Let me tell you, I was a catcher clear up until I went racing at 18 years old. My father thought I could be a catcher for the bullpen or something. He says, a bullpen catcher makes more money than a truck driver, and I could catch. But there's this little story about me getting into auto racing that comes right out of the baseball diamond. The Pittsburgh team had come to Kansas City and was called the Kansas City A's. And every place you went on a baseball diamond in Kansas City, they were looking for a local ball player. And one time I was at 18th and Paseo, and a guy in the audience says, come here, youngster. That's not a term for a baseball player. But anyway, I had tried to run out of slug bunt, and he called me over, and he says, son, he says, you're the only youngster that I ever saw that ran to first base and the dust came up in front of him. In my thoughts, I said, I'll have to get in a race car to get to first base. So that kind of ties baseball into auto racing.
Your older brother Jimmy got the racing kicked off in your family. What do you remember about his racing career?
Jimmy was a very good mechanic, along with being a race driver. He was 6 years older than I, but he was excellent at fixing cars and building engines and things like that. And he took me racing with him. And we raced at Marshall, Missouri, which was Sportsman Speedway, and clear down to Butler, Missouri, that was Bates County Speedway. And these were coupe days. And he drove for a company called Highway Auto Parts. Today, you'd call it a junkyard. That's how he got started. We ran Sweet Springs, Missouri, and Olympic Stadium in Kansas City, and Riverside Stadium. And we had about five different places. This was before we ran many half miles. These were all quarter mile races and very competitive.
Olympic Stadium, the pictures I've seen, what a cool place. Drivers like Buzz Barton, Jerry Weld, Lloyd Ruby, Judd Larson, Ralph Parkinson Sr., amazing talent at that track.
If you won Olympic Stadium, that was a feather in your cap, and I don't care if you won the Indianapolis Speedway, you would come there on a Sunday night just to compete in midget racing, and they would put probably 30 to 40 cars in the pits, and it was probably, if you were older, I would tell you to put two pills under your tongue, and that's how exciting it was.
Explain what a typical modified looked like back in that time period, and what were some of the modifications and speed equipment guys were using?
Up until they brought in the super modified, there was rules. If you had a Ford chassis, you had a Ford engine, and if you had a Hudson chassis, you had to have a Hudson engine and things like that. And until we modified things, then we went to tube frames and things like that. But this was into the 60s. Up until the late 50s, we had midgets was the big item in Missouri area, and it was tremendous. Open wheel racing was very popular back then, and drivers would run Kansas City, Omaha, Oklahoma City, Dallas. They'd run six nights a week and Sunday afternoon, but they'd all end up at Olympic Stadium for the Sunday night show there. That was the He-Man part. I watched A.J. Foyt win his first USAC race there, and I'm sure that if you've talked to people, everybody was there that night. Well, they probably pulled 3,000 to 4,000 people at a little racetrack, quarter mile, but it had grandstands all the way around it, so it could seat people. So that's the quality of racing we had then.
Ray Lee, you were also willing to work for a racing engine. That is a great story.
Yes, sir. I was at Central High School. That's where I graduated. Of course, it's in Kansas City. And Elmer Lane wanted someone to work on, it was called COE. You would go to school, and in the afternoon, you'd spend 2 hours at a garage or whatever you decided to be your line of work. And I chose a machine shop The gentleman that owned it was Elmer Lane, and his children are still in auto racing to this day. Matter of fact, the machine works is still in business, Lane Machinery, down on Gardner. Anyway, he told me that he couldn't afford to pay much money. And I said, really and truly, I want to learn about auto racing, and I don't need any money. So we decided if I would work for him and take in work from BOP or anybody that needed machine work done. The other one was the government place where the old wooden track was at 95th and Holmes, and that was Bendix Corporation. And we took in work from a government contract for screw machines and boxing and shipping and things like that. And so I did the work he told me to do, and at the end of the education, I got a GMC engine for my race car. So that was an even trade.
There were some interesting engine choices back in Noah's days also. The flathead V8s, the flathead 4 and 6 cylinders, and then there was the GMC 6s. My friend Glenn Anderson ran one of those in his sprint car, and those were a hot setup.
And they were tough as a by God. Mine was called a 304 GMC, and that meant that the engine was 4x4. A square engine. Of course, it was 6-cylinder, but it was a 4-inch bore and a 4-inch stroke. And it was just as tough as, you know, it was just a tough piece of equipment. I owned that car, and Elmer gave me the engine. And when I went on up and racing, I took everything back to his shop and give it back to him. So there was never a dollar changed hands.
Another piece of racing history that I barely remember from my childhood is the race cars being flat-towed to and from the racetrack.
Yeah, we had tow bars. It was like a trailer, only we had no wheels, so we'd put it on, and it was a trailer hitch, and you'd hook it onto the front of your race car, and you kick your car out of gear, and away you'd go. It was what we call flat tow, and we'd go everywhere. We'd go to Marshall and Sweet Springs. This is dangerous. If we didn't have enough room in the pickup truck for people to ride, we'd get back in the race car and ride to the racetrack on a flat tow. You know, it's definitely against the law. But all us children, 2 to 3 of us, to get in a race car, that was a way to get to the racetrack.
You made your first trip to Knoxville Raceway in 1963 as a 20-some-year-old kid from Kansas. What was that very first experience like?
I was 23 years old, and we had not ran many half miles. We ran Topeka, Kansas, and Lakeside Stadium was in Wyandotte County, Kansas, which is just outside of the city limits of Kansas City. But when we went to Knoxville, I tell everybody that you took your dress between your legs or you blow it up in your face. It was the first place where there was speed involved that was close to 100 miles an hour.
From what I've been told by guys like Jim Edgington and Norm Wiemers, you knew immediately that this is some serious racing. Names like Opperman, Weld, Blundy, and many more.
Yes, and they were all good. Believe me, Blundy was champion up there for several years. And I live in Sedalia, Missouri right now. And Bill Utz lives about 4 miles south of me, and I think he was 2 or 3-time champion at Knoxville, Iowa. He was competitive on the big tracks and probably not so much locally.
The Weld family, ahead of their time, is that a true statement?
Very true. Even the father raced motorcycles back in the 20s. And I tell everybody that people are tougher than nails. Well, he's tougher than a big nail. Pappy Weld, he had all his family, and they were all into auto racing through the garage. I met him at a place called Hollywood Muffler down on McGee Street, and he was putting on mufflers at that time. Him and Jerry, when Jerry got big enough to do his own welding and things, they moved into their own shop on 27th Street, which was a dragster business, and his name was Cox. And when Mr. Cox moved out, he sold to Taylor Weld, which was Pappy, and they were there clear up into the best part of the 80s.
One of the best statements I heard in racing, you made the comment at Kenny Weld's funeral, all of Kenny Weld's cars will be going to heaven too, because Kenny raced the hell out of them.
That was at his funeral, and that was a true statement. Kenny was the youngest, but Greg was, I'm not talking about education. I'm talking about being engineers, born engineers. And Jerry was a natural racer. And he would work on your car in the pits and let his car go, and then he'd get in his car and beat you when you went racing after him working on your car. He would try to make you competitive, and he would do it for nothing. His oldest daughter does go with Junior Parkinson, and we see her often. And there's things about Jerry Weld that probably nobody knows unless they went into his shop. He would do work on an older person's car that could not afford it, and they'd try to pay him, and he'd say, "Get out of my way. I got a doctor coming in. He'll pay for both of them." And that was a kind of a joke, of course, but he was a great guy. If you had troubles, you take it to Jerry Weld.
You were crowned the KCARC point champion in 1964, 65, and 66, and then started traveling a little more with the IMCA.
That's correct. I first went to work driving. There was three different men that I drove for. I always could pick a mechanic. And if all these racers that are great winners and all that, all you got to do is look in their pits and there's a great mechanic there that always is in the background. But in my history, I knew that back in 56, we brought a drag strip to Kansas City, and it was a gift to the Kansas City Police Department. And so they would get the cars off the street and take them down on Choteau Traffic Way. They had a drag strip, but that's where the horsepower came in. All forms of racing came off of the drag strip. Seems like the drag mechanic did a better job on valve tuning and things like that that really would turn the engine, such as a Chevrolet, into a monster. And it all came from the drag strip. So I had two drag strip mechanics, and that's why I won. First man I ever beat in Kansas City in championship was Junior Howard. He was like seven times champion of Kansas City. And I hired a mechanic who was called Norclay Automotive, was the sponsor, and Duck Corum was the mechanic. And he could overhaul a car by just putting in new spark plugs. He was a double sharp on valve timing and things like this. And so I had Duck Corum, and then I had a gentleman by the name of Bob Bilsell, and he was also a drag strip man. And when I owned my own car, this was a 13 car, we won championships at Kansas City, Topeka, Kansas, and just almost any place we ran, we were their champion. I had great mechanics.
In 1968, you went to Indy. How did that trip come about, and were you able to get a ride?
Greg Wells went first, and so I won some races here in Kansas City and the half-mile tracks around, but I was with Luther Brewer in Drexel, Missouri. It's an enormous engineer and mechanic. So I wanted to take his car to USAC, and it was called a Don Edmonds chassis, only it was not an Edmonds chassis. It was built by Brewer, but they wouldn't let it run over there in the day of 68. So I went over there without a ride, and I was not successful. I got a ride there one night at Lakeside with a boy out of Joliet, Illinois, and we qualified and ran in the top 10, and I don't exactly know where we ran, but it was respectable. So then I thought I could run USAC, and I was a person that if I didn't put money in my pocket, I wouldn't cheat my family, and so I came back home. I was not successful in USAC.
We had a chance to sit with you and your friends at the USAC Corn Belt Nationals at Knoxville Raceway in July. You were introduced to us as the 1968 Knoxville National Champion, Ray Lee Goodwin. Did you know right away how big of a win that was over Jerry Blundy and Earl Wagner?
At the time, no, sir. And I tell you what, one of my best friends was Gordon Woolley out of Waco, Texas. And he was older. He had a career in Texas before he ever came to the Midwest. And then he was IMCA champion at an older age. I mean, wheelchair age, you know what I'm saying? He was an older gentleman, but he could race. And he told me at Des Moines, Iowa, I was disgusted because something happened to the car. And he said, Raymond, he always called me Raymond. He said, you'll learn that you've done something last night that you will live with the rest of your life. and it's something to be very proud of. And that was the first time that I sat down in the pits and looked at my feet and said, he just made a hell of a statement.
Another huge win, the Missouri Futurity on a mile. What was that day like?
Well, Missouri was one of the last places to have a mile. And as a young man, I sat in the grandstand and watched Al Unser win the Missouri Futurity and Bobby Unser win the Missouri Futurity. And there was a gentleman out of California named Porky Rockowitz. And he came in here with the Howard Offie, and he won the Missouri Futurity. All these gentlemen the next May were sitting in speedway cars at Indianapolis. And so, in my mind, I thought, if I can win the Missouri Futurity, that's a ticket to Indianapolis. But in between the times of them gentlemen going to Indianapolis and in 1971 that I won the Futurity, they had went from speedway cars or roadsters to rear engine cars, and I was a person of 200 pounds at birth, I think, and that was not made for rear engine race cars. And so that kind of put me out of the category of going to speedway.
Do you remember the car you ran for Lakefield, Minnesota's Lauren Woodke?
Yeah, I sure do. That's a tremendous story. Yes, there's another thing, a tremendous mechanic. He had a man, the Budweiser car, and he had Bobby what? What was Bobby's
Bob name? Gellner.
Yeah, Gellner. He let me drive that car. This is in 71, and I needed some points at Spencer, Iowa. I needed some points to clinch the championship for IMCA. And that gentleman that was number two was out of Illinois, and he was a one-armed bandit named Chuck Amani. Chuck Amani was running right down my neck. And so Bob let me have his race car to run to Spencer, Iowa, and we ran within, we'll say, the top 10. That's what I like to say, we ran within the top 10, and that doesn't mean like you're boasting, you understand? So I drove for Wiki, and the car was very competitive. Thad Dozier wins it, and I could spit down his neck. Anyway, that gave me enough points that I didn't have to run any more shows with IMCA that year. I gave somebody money for going out to eat. Of course, I was always good friends with Bob Gellner, so that's the name of that story. If it wasn't for Bobby giving me his ride, I'd have had to run the next four shows or something with IMCA to clinch the championship. I did it in one night at Spencer, Iowa.
One of my favorite drivers was Roger Rager. What are your memories of running against Roger?
When we talk about people in the Midwest, we talk about being brave. Of course, the name that comes up, it was the boy from Michigan named Johnny White. We said at the time, I said, he's so brave he's got hair on the bottom of his feet. And Roger Rager fell into this category. This goes clear back. This is Lincoln, Nebraska. His father was first a sprint car driver and I think had one of them airplane engines in his car and also had a GMC. But Rager, they owned a tire shop there in Lincoln, and he was very young when he came out. Him and Greitz were best friends, the gentleman that lost his life there at Lincoln, Kenny Greitz. But they were always good, and Roger was just always having fun going as fast as the automobile was capable of running. When I see him, we just sit and reminisce. Good racer. Good racer. He even took a car to the Speedway with Wayne House, was a mechanic at Lincoln, Nebraska. And Wayne House took Rager to the Speedway with a Chevrolet.
I just read an incredible book on Speedy Bill Smith. How did you get hooked up with Bill and the 4X car?
Well, my wife, Alice Jane, was a school teacher. And she was a school teacher because she could have the summers off and go racing with me. And when she retired in 94 as a school teacher, I retired in 90 from working. We went home to the farm. Well, anyway, she said that she would like to see every place she taught in school. So we started traveling on these boats. I always call them boats, and the captain always, they're ships, he says. We went on them, and we went every place you can imagine, to Rome and to the Holy Lands, and wherever she wanted to go, we went. for years. We started in 1990. And so when we'd come home and go to the races, she would go to the racetrack and sit with Bill Smith's wife, Joyce. She happened to be Joyce Alice Smith. Well, anyway, they didn't give a damn about racing. Mrs. Smith said the only place she goes is to rallies for racing, and she'd love to hear Alice tell stories of where she went. Truthfully, I was not a big fan of Bill Smith, but I was a great friend of Joyce, and my wife and her made the whole family a one. You understand? I drove for Bill on two or three occasions before he hired me. That was one of the first team. The car was out of the house, Speedway Motors, and I drove. One year it was number 99, but it was still a Speedway car. You see what I'm saying? And it was 1974 and 1975, and that was my last year of racing. I lost my eye at Knoxville, Iowa, in my sight. But that's the way I met Bill Smith, is through his wife.
And as you just stated, 74 and 75 were tough. Talk about that first crash in 74 and what happened.
Well, it happened to be a race on the back chute at Knoxville. And I was a person that I always knew where all the mechanics were that would tell their driver where he was in competition. And I would always spot these out. So I was kind of a person that I would look around a lot. You know what I mean? Well, I'm going through number one and two at Knoxville. And I'm looking over, and Jerry Blundy's in the 33 car, which was built back east. And it was a very professional race car. And when I looked over at him, I seen that his front wheels were up in the air about the best part of 3 feet. And so I discontinued anything about Jerry Blundy was up there stuck in the mud. You know what I'm saying? So as I come off of four, he had recovered. And as I was going to the cushion, I bumped into him coming down off of two. And I did one of them airborne deals without a parachute and was very seriously injured. Arms, and it hurt my eyesight the first time. And it was about July of 74. And so then I was out of commission until February of 75. Matter of fact, I just talked to Gary Swenson, who was my mechanic in Nebraska, just before you called. Anyway, we're up there pheasant hunting. I've been hired in beer joints and racetracks and every place else to drive race cars, but I was never hired in a field hunting pheasants. Well, anyway, we're hunting pheasants out there in Nebraska, and I was pass shooting. That means you're blocker. And a bird come by, and we clunked him. And here come another bird come by, and we shot him. And I heard the guys up at the other end says, hell, if he can pass shoot pheasants, he can surely drive a race car again. And that's where I went to work for Bill Smith. I mean, that's a different kind of a story, but that's exactly how it happened.
51 weeks to the day, you crashed in the very same spot, and that one ended your career.
Yes, sir. And that was another race that probably Eddie Levitt got blamed for. It was not Levitt's fault at all. He's driving we called it the farmer's car. It was number 40. And they were from Webster City, Iowa, up in that direction, and very big farmers. And the car was very, very nice car. Anyway, you just talked about Roger Rager. First thing, this feature starts, I take Rager down, and I take him through the chalet, where the track is so rough, you cannot stay in the race car. Well, I'm on the outside in the smooth part, so I run Rager through this little chalet there going into number three turn, and his race car bounced in the air, spun around, and landed. Nobody got hurt. He's heading back to number two turn, and I put that down on the calendar up here in my mind. I said, well, if he can't get through there, there's nobody going to get through there on a restart. You hear me? So Rager didn't get hurt. He goes, I can't even remember what car he was in, but it was faster, or he wouldn't have been leading the race. Then we restart the race, and Eddie Levitt's on the inside of me, and I'm taking him down through the little bouncing chalet here. And I got him down there. The front end of his car comes up in the air. And as I look over at him, his hands come off the wheel. So this is not Levitt's fault. You know, he wasn't the strongest man in the world. He wasn't a muscle man. But the hands come off the wheel. The car turned to the right into my race car and put me upside down. So as I look at it today, 80 years old, it was not Levitt's fault. but it did put me out of business, and I wouldn't race after that, knowing that if I couldn't see, I might hurt somebody. So that was the end of my career right there on the back chute in Knoxville, Iowa.
Ray Lee, thank you so much for your outstanding racing career. Thank you for the memories, and thank you for being with us here on The Dirt Show.
Well, sir, I tell you this. I appreciate you calling me, and it's very nice for you to remember an old race driver. But I'll tell you this. Your friendship is worth more than all the racing that ever can happen. And I thank you so much for meeting you at Knoxville. And if I'm ever anywhere close, I don't see well, but if I'm anywhere close, you come see me and we'll rehearse this telephone operation.
Ray Lee, thanks for being with us.
And may God bless you and for all your friends. It was a wonderful evening that I will never forget.
If you're in need of a worry-free powerlift door, then you'll want to stop and talk with Rod French. Make a statement with a powerlift architectural door on your home or cabin. Powerlift doors can be retrofitted to fit an existing door opening or designed into your next commercial, agricultural, livestock, or aircraft hangar build. Stylish, functional, and built to last. Powerlift doors by French's Manufacturing are made locally in Dodge Center, Minnesota by their experienced craftsmen. Contact Callie or Rod. Powerlift doors by French's Manufacturing. 374-9306.
Why would you use anything but the latest technology and packing products when it comes to shipping your business products? Foamcraft Packaging in Owatonna provides a complete line of packaging materials, including foam products, pallets, crates, corrugated boxes, and much, much more. See all our different packaging options at foamcraftpackaging.com or call 455-2893. That's 455-2893.
Arrow Race Wheels was established on the conviction that its dedicated staff could provide higher quality wheels designed specifically to endure the tough requirements and conditions of the racing industry. Most importantly, the wheels need to be manufactured and sold, maintaining an affordable price structure. Arrow Racing Wheels has become the largest premier steel wheel supplier, and their product line speaks for itself. Upgrade your racing game today at arrowracewheels.com.
One of our brand new items for 2019, we're very excited to unleash our new 3D printed plastic trickery to our line. First part in that line is our new Raceiver mount. They're available for the Fusion or Element, and you can tie strap them to a roll bar, or we have a flat mount that you can pop rivet to your interior tin or the side of your helmet, or you can Velcro it. One of the nice features of having it on your helmet instead of being on your seatbelt or to a tube is you can get out in a hurry and not have to worry about where your Raceiver is or being tied down to your belts or tied down to a tube. It's real nice to have it on the side of your helmet so you can get out of the car very fast. And as always, check us out online at weirdsmachine.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to the sponsor segment here on The Dirt Show, and it is always a pleasure to be joined by Scott Wolf from Wolf & Sons Yard Service. And Scott, it's always great to talk with you and pick your brain for some information. Let's start with these Japanese beetles. These things are destructive and really have taken hold here in southern Minnesota.
They really have. It was a couple years ago where we started really seeing them, not only out in the ag community, but also in the residential town areas. Like any other insect, they have their favorite food source as far as the linden tree, the birch tree, and some apple trees. The nice thing about it is that their cycle is only for 3 or 4 weeks. The problem is they completely devastate stuff in 3 or 4 weeks, and if you aren't on top of it right away, watching for that stuff in June or July when they start hatching and coming out of the ground as grubs up into their beetle form, they can eat your trees real quickly. And so what's nice is once you start seeing them, chances are we've already been called or notified in the office from other people. But once you call into the office, then we can have a fairly quick response time on that as far as helping you out on your trees or shrubs or vines where they're really eating up the foliage.
And from what I've seen in the area, if you don't do anything, they will kill your trees.
Yeah, the first year what happens is that they eat all the foliage, tree keeps living, but it's not able to grow and put nutrients in the ground for the tree and help it winterize. And so if you don't do something about it, or the beetles continue to find the same trees, which they more than likely will, because when they are eating and mating, they're laying all the grubs under those trees in your sod and turf beneath that. And so it's pretty easy for the grubs to hatch and just fly upward into the same tree that their parents were in the following year. So having said that, if they eat your foliage off for 2-3 straight years, you can pretty much cut that tree down.
The emerald ash borer, lots of dead trees around the area. Once everything is frozen, it's a great time to get those trees removed to try to prevent further spread.
Yeah, well, and ash trees, you know, once they get to be midlife or older, they're kind of a messy tree anyway, and they shed limbs and branches and everything like that. The nice thing about doing trees or maintenance with Wolf and Sons is not only can we limb or prune trees or take them down if they are dead, but we also offer emerald ash borer treatment, and our treatment is a non-invasive one. There's two different kinds. You can either spray and have it penetrate the bark and as a herbicide and help kill the emerald ash borers, or you can go ahead, and I know that some companies do a drill-in tactic, but we don't favor that as much because it's a little bit more invasive to the tree.
Another question with this rapidly changing weather, people that still wanted to get out and take a hedge trimmer to their overgrown hedges and prune them up so when they come back next spring, they're not so bulky. Can you still do that?
Yeah, I don't think you're really risking frostbite per se on your shrubs. The big thing is the snow going to go away? And boy, we hope it will. It's October, so you have cold days and you have warm days, but no one expected 8 inches of snow last Tuesday when we got all that snow and slush. And if the lows are getting there, then it's a little riskier, but I still wouldn't hesitate shaping up your shrubs for the sheer fact that you are not trimming off your buds and new growth right now. You're just taking off this year's growth and making them the shape and size and volume shrub that you want to have.
The word yard service is very deceiving. You have dump trucks, excavators, bulldozers, road graders, and more.
It's fun going to work in the morning and being able to set out different projects and being able to have the equipment to do those things. And we do. This year we've been on small tiling projects for farmers that just require a sinkhole fixed in the field, and it's a simple patchwork, and we have a small excavator and a small dozer, and so that works good. We need dirt to fill in that hole. We have dump trucks to help out on that side of it. We do culvert changeouts if your field driveway is not flowing anymore because your culvert is rusted out or collapsed. Many different things on that side of it. We do deliveries of rock and dirt all over the county, and that's at a competitive rate, and normally we're able to work that into a schedule within a couple of days. Obviously, if you can plan your delivery, that is always easier to schedule. But on the backside of that, we try and really redirect our staffing to help you as soon as your needs are there, if we can.
Experience, that is something a person gains over the years. Two times I have contacted you, once about a dying tree that you saved, and the second about a driveway that I thought needed more gravel, but you steered me away from that decision to keep water from flowing back into my garage. There's nothing like a yard service person that has experience.
First off, should say thank you. That's a great referrals. But sometimes I would almost say that when you're calling me to ask us to do something, sometimes I think I seem a little bit nosy. But it surely is not to be nosy, but to make sure you're getting the end result that you want. And you and your wife wanted a driveway that didn't have weeds on. So your thought was to work it up, add gravel, and top dress it. But what we didn't think about was the grade of the land. And if we didn't remove gravel, which was going to be a lot more money than just simply spraying it with Roundup, then what was going to happen was we were going to steer water into the garage, and that didn't make any sense. All of a sudden, we had a secondary result that we didn't even think about. So a lot of times when someone calls on the phone and it's something that isn't just can you come mow my lawn? We need a day to come and take a look and make sure that what you're asking us to do isn't going to cause a secondary result that no one wants.
Residential, commercial, and industrial, from a small job to a large job, you can service everyone.
We do. We try and put forth a good foot, and we have some very large companies in town that we hope they think do a good job for, but we have a long-lasting relationship with them, so obviously that's a feather in our hat as far as mowing and shrub trimming and plowing for them. But we also do odds and ends things. This year, we had an individual that called and said she had a sinkhole in the yard, so that's obviously something that kind of piques my interest. So we went up there, and here she, fortunately enough, had the neighbor help barricade it. She had a 17 and a half foot deep hand-dug well from the 1800s that opened up in the yard. The other part of that is that we knew who to talk to, and there was a program out there that actually helped her pay for us to fill that in through the county. And so not only is it a fact of doing good work for our customers, but sometimes just being in business and not being the brand new guy on the block means that we have experience to help you also pay for your job, even if it's not you paying for the whole job.
Scott, if listeners out there are thinking about trying to get a project done yet this fall, or maybe they have a graduate next spring and they want to get some stuff scheduled right away when the snow melts so they can get ready for that graduation party, what's the best way to get a hold of Wolf & Sons Yard Service?
That really is through the office. Between Amy and Megan, they keep great track of everything and try and funnel it to the correct people that are looking at the jobs or scheduling the jobs. And the phone number in the office is 507-455-3524.
Scott, thank you for always supporting The Dirt Show. I appreciate it a lot. You do a lot for our community, and thanks for everything you do.
Well, Clayton, I just wanted to say thank you, because no matter how much you pay for advertisement, which we all need to do if we want to continue growing and refreshing our business with new customers, you can't buy the referrals that you commonly give to me that I hear about, and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Winning drivers rely on VP Racing Fuels to optimize performance. Now get the same benefit with VP Mativs, offering race fuel technology for your daily driver. Increase fuel mileage and restore power to your streetcar with VP's fuel system cleaner. Or give your race car a boost with VP's Octanium, improving your fuel's octane by up to 8 numbers and giving you the throttle response your performance car was built to deliver. That's VP Mativs, available at your local AutoZone store or at VPRacingFuels.com.
Here's one of the most incredible lubricating products ever made, Justice Brothers JB80. It's twice as good at lubricating just about everything around the home, shop, and your car. JB80 has a penetrating action that goes straight to the problem areas and even the tightest places. Try JB80, the incredible spray lubricant that's twice as good, and it's guaranteed to satisfy or your money back. Tell them Ed Justice Jr. sent you.
Rhino Egg is now raising the bar even more by being the only manufacturer of rotary cutters in the world to factory fill all components with Lucas oil and grease, adding even more value to the Rhino brand over the competition. Quality from the inside out. Visit rhinoag.com to find a dealer near you. Fast Shafts owner Pat Fagan is a racer himself and has been testing and building drive shafts for himself and teams all over the nation since 1992. Fast Shaft drive shafts are the number one carbon fiber, steel, chrome moly, and aluminum drive shaft builder for over 90% of the major modified chassis builders. Drive shafts, drive shaft repair, 9-inch Ford center sections, slip yokes, rear end yokes, ring and pinions, bearings, spools, gears, shim kits, and more. Call Fast Shafts today. Made by racers for racers. 800-622-6617.
Welcome back to the sponsor segment here on The Dirt Show, and I am joined by Corey from Byers Racing Engines in Rochester, Minnesota. And Corey, now is the time. If you've got a tired engine in your street rod, in your race car, and you know it really needs to be refreshened or totally rebuilt, now's the time to get those engines in so you can get it in your car for next spring. Now is the time, right, Corey?
This is a perfect time. Right now, usually we get a little bit of a lull right at the end of the season, and the sooner you get it in, the better. Get in line, get it done, especially with this glorious year, so you just don't know what's going to go on as far as your manufacturer's price increases possibly in 2021, so trying to beat any of that kind of stuff, save you money. So yeah, it doesn't get much better of a time.
Corey, people have heard us talk about Byers Racing Engines on the show over the years. Seeing is believing. We were out at Madison Speedway a few weeks ago, and we watched Les Duelman, believe it or not, got his very first Superstock feature win. He's won many times in late models, modifieds over the years, but this was his very first Superstock feature win, and wow, did that motor pull. You could just hear that thing coming down the front straight and holding off Shane Sobraski for the win. It was a dominant performance with that Byers Racing engine.
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook. It was pretty neat for him, especially since he has been around a while. And sometimes it's a young guy's sport, but the old guy can pull it off once in a while, which is very, very, very cool. Just to hop right in a different class is always a challenge. You know, I personally don't drive any of them, but I've heard certain ones are different animals than the others. So, I mean, for him to pull that off, especially with our power under the hood, is really, really nice.
A question came up during the season, and I've been waiting to talk to you because I want to find your answer. I had a Mod 4 driver on saying that when the tracks are correct, they're able to hold the car flat on the floor and run wide open for 20 laps in the feature if they want to. But he said, I also do some of my own engine work, and I know that's probably not a good idea not to burp that motor at least once going into the corner. Why?
Honestly, I don't know the good answer to that one as far as a driver's standpoint, as far as an engine standpoint. Every time you're on and off the throttle or close the blades, all your parts want to separate. As far as your connecting rods, they take a little bit more stress as far as basically like holding your hand over a vacuum. All of a sudden, your vacuum is going and you put your hand over it. You're getting that downward force pulling on and it's trying to stretch the piston rod apart. So anytime, it's usually if anything breaks, as far as the brake situation, that's way usually on a dirt track deal. If an engine's going to break a rod or whatever, it's going to break. As soon as you dump the throttle, usually coming into a corner, that's usually what causes them to break. As far as the rest of the stuff goes, by rights, if it's built for it, if you've got good stuff in there, that's what they're made for. They're made for holding together at high RPM. You know, as long as you're not above what your engine guy built it for, your parts are capable of. If you can hold it open and if it works, well, use it. But I've heard that as far as on a driver standpoint, it helps corner the car. That quick dump helps turn the car the way you want it.
You also work on some very rare and unusual motors. Jim was just saying you've got a flathead in there. I've seen a Ferrari V12 in there. I've seen old flathead four cylinders. If you've got a motor and it needs to be rebuilt, you guys can do it.
Yeah, there's not many that we can't touch, especially in the older stuff. We have pretty good connections with parts. Engine's an engine that's just got a different engineer put it together. So it's a little bit of figuring and doing some research. The older stuff and the more complicated stuff does take a little bit more time just because you're not accustomed to it. It's not a small box Chevy where everybody's done one. So you've got to take a little bit of time and research on what the bad features you got to try to correct and what their quirks. I think we have one flathead V8 in here currently. You'll like this. Over the summer, we did some work for Leroy Sharkey. He brought in a flathead Ford that he's working on for one of his gigs, put it all together himself. So that's pretty cool. As far as I know, it's not enough for a street car. I thought it'd be kind of cool if he did one of them old vintage race things. That'd be kind of funny for him, but it's just for a street car.
Corey, from one car guy to another, thank you for all you guys do at Byers Racing Engines. How can listeners find out more and get their engine in line to get it rebuilt for spring?
You can call us at 507-282-5586. Ask for either myself or Jim. Best ones to chat with. Otherwise, we're on the web, BayersEngine.com, BayersEngine.com. Throw us an email, throw us a call. We'll figure something out for you. Glad to help. No, not a problem.
Corey, thank you for being with us here on The Dirt Show.
Awesome. Thank you, Clay.
Medieval Metalworks is a 25,000 square foot facility in Mankato specializing in CNC tube laser and bending and is the only facility in the area with those capabilities. Medieval Metalworks is a leading precision metal fabrication shop offering all the latest custom metal fabrication technologies under one roof. Whether you need a one-off custom part or thousands of parts produced for your business, contact Medieval Metalworks at 507-386-3930 or stop by and see them at 3000 Technology Drive in Mankato.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum's biannual raffle sprint car giveaway is rapidly coming to a close with our drawing on Friday, December 18th this year. We'd like to especially thank Speedway Motors, EMI Chassis, and all of the component builders and manufacturers for donating all of the pieces and parts and labor to build this beautiful number 4X Speedway Motors raffle sprint car for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. If you'd like to get a chance to get in on this year's raffle, the 4X Raffle Sprint Car, all you have to do is visit sprintcarraffle.net to get your tickets to win this beautiful race car. Tickets are $20 each or $6 for $100, and the drawing is December 18th, right before Christmas this year. So visit rafflesprintcar.net for all of the details on how you can win this beautiful new Speedway Motors EMI 410 Sprint Car on December 18th. And thank you for supporting the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum.
Extreme Powder Coating.
Why choose powder coating over liquid paint finishes? Maximum durability. Extreme Powder Coatings offer a scientific process that uses heat to bake the colorful finish deep into your product. Extreme Powder Coatings can deliver multimedia blasting, impact-resistant epoxy primers, and super durable powder coat applications to meet your needs. Visit ExtremePowderCoating.net for more information.
Extreme Powder Coating.
Welcome back to our special segment here on The Dirt Show, brought to you by Cookies, Barbecue Sauces and Seasonings, and Speed. It's been a very unusual 2020 for everybody. I would like to thank you for being on The Dirt Show again this season, giving everybody some great tailgating recipes to make out at the racetrack or campground when they're out getting ready for the races around the area. And Speed, you have a full line of products, and I don't think listeners realize all of the great products that you offer.
Well, I'll tell you what, Clayne, first off, I want to thank all the listeners and that up there, too, that have supported our product through the many years that we've been a sponsor of The Dirt Show. It's been a great partnership for everybody all the way around, and I certainly want to thank everybody for their support and buying our products at all the independent grocery stores, the Walmarts, the Hy-Vees, Fairways, Super Values, Targets, on and on and on. I want to thank everybody for the support. And probably our largest single sale increase was in our flavor enhancer and all-purpose seasoning that goes good on all types of proteins and vegetables and you name it, sweet corn. It's just a good all-purpose seasoning. And then, of course, our original is still our number one selling sauce, the sweet smoky flavor of the original. And then, of course, we move into the sweet hickory, which has got a little bit of pineapple juice concentrate in it and got a little bit of a kick to it. Western style, which got a little bit of minced onion and jalapeno pepper powder in it. And, of course, the tangy mustard with a little bit of mustard in it to give it just that tang from the mustard. Of course, then we move right into our sweet and spicy that's got a little bit of molasses and jalapeno pepper powder in it. The other thing that's really coming on strong is our Korean barbecue sauce. Stir fry in a bottle. It makes everything so easy. Just grab your favorite protein and cook it up with a little bit of flavor enhancer on it. Throw in a mixed vegetables and steam it through and dump on some of the Korean sauce and serve it over rice. And I'll tell you what, you're in for a tasty treat. And then from there, Clayne, of course, we move into the mild and medium salsas, which are excellent. They're a nice, thick, stick your chip in, and you're going to come out with a lot of nice, good, tasty product on it. Then, of course, we move into our wings and things, hot sauce, as well as our taco sauce. So we've got kind of a sauce for everybody, and I've always said if you buy too much, I'll be the first to stop you. So all of the stores that the listeners can get into, they should all have our product, and if they don't have them, just ask them for it because it's available to all the stores. And with the holiday season coming up, don't forget to go to Cookies' website and order some gift packs in. If you're in business, order in a bunch of them for your customers. It makes a nice
thank you for the holidays. And we also have our aprons on there and cookbooks. And so just load up, and as always, stay in the sauce. Just make sure it's cookie sauce, the sauce without a hangover, Clean.
And Speed, I want to end the season by saying a personal thank you. All of the tracks that we visit, it is unbelievable how many cookies, barbecue sauces, and seasoning signs and billboards we see up that you're supporting the local dirt tracks, and thank you for that.
Well, yeah, and of course, thanks to all the tracks, too. I mean, they've done a wonderful job of helping us. It makes for a fun combination, put it that way.
Speed, thanks for being with us, and talk to you in April.
You betcha. Have a good one, pal. Take care. Bye.
If your classic isn't so classic, bring it into Auto Trim Design of Owatonna. We can fix the upholstery, the carpet, replace a sagging headliner, make your old car look new again, make your seats comfortable again. Whether it's a classic car, work truck, boat, or anything else that moves, we can fix the upholstery and make your ride like new. And we work on convertibles. We're located in Owatonna at 3275 Old Highway 14, 1 mile west of Walmart.
Hi, this is Harvey West, and you've been listening to The Dirt Show. See you at the races.